For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. U.S. President Donald Trump is praising Pakistan for their efforts in freeing the Coleman Boyle family after 5 years held captive by the Taliban. Caitlin Coleman was pregnant with her first child when she and her husband Joshua Boyle were kidnapped during a backpacking trip in 2012. Since then, she's had a total of 3 children, and the Haqqani Network has released multiple videos of the growing family. The American president is calling their release a positive moment for U.S.-Pakistan relations.
Yesterday, the United States government, working with the government of Pakistan, secured the release of Caitlin Coleman, Joshua Boyle, and their 3 children from captivity from the Haqqani Network, a terrorist organization with ties to the Taliban. The Pakistani government's cooperation is a sign that it is honoring America's wish that it do more to provide security in the region.
A British jihadist nicknamed the White Widow has reportedly been killed in an American drone strike in Syria. The Sun newspaper reports that the United Kingdom was informed in June that 50-year-old Sally Jones had been killed. Sally Jones was thought to be a leading recruiter for the Islamic State. Major General Chip Chapman, a former counterterrorism chief at Britain's Ministry of Defense, says her death is a blow to the Islamic State group.
So if you take out those who are high-value targets from the women, it's going to have an impact at the operational level of IS.
23 are confirmed dead and more than 3,500 structures destroyed in the California wildfires. Our correspondent Mary McCarthy is near the city of Santa Rosa. She says the situation is increasingly desperate.
It's really, frankly, more pessimistic now, saying it's not a question of stopping things, really even getting them under control, but just doing basic containment to limit the already horrific damage, with the weather forecast saying high winds will continue likely for several more days. It's just impossible. The flames are so strong and so hot. They're so unpredictable. The number of evacuations is sort of constantly increasing.
The United States is pulling out of the United Nations Cultural Organization, UNESCO, citing an anti-Israel bias. Our correspondent William Denslow at the UN headquarters in New York says this decision has been a long time coming.
According to U.S. officials, this has been in the works for months, and U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, has repeatedly expressed her anger at UNESCO in the past. Of course, this isn't the first time the United States has made this decision. Under Ronald Reagan, they made a similar move, citing UNESCO as having a pro-Soviet bias.
U.S. President Donald Trump has also threatened to pull federal emergency workers sooner rather than later from Puerto Rico. This is FSN.
Right, thank you, Priscilla Huff. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com and Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Good to have your company. Let's crack on. Lots to do. And we're going to need every second of the 2 hours we have tonight.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, the retired Detective Constable Maggie Oliver, the woman who helped expose the Rochdale grooming gang and then, to her eternal credit, blew the whistle on serious police failings in the handling of the case. And Maggie Oliver joins the programme this hour. A lot to talk about with her. And in the second hour, the journalist, the author and the political pundit Liz Crokin returns to this programme. This is going to be very interesting. We're going to talk about Washington DC and Hollywood paedophile rings with Liz in the second hour. So there's a bit of a central theme running through the programme today, this evening, as we are here in Manchester. Thursday, 13th of October 2017. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show if you've anything to tell me about any of these issues. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, we're on davidicke.com. Do check out davidicke.com for all the analysis that you need on all of these big stories. We're live on Fab Radio 2, commercial radio in Manchester, and TuneIn Radio as well. Happy 43rd birthday to Dean Smith. Happy birthday, Dean, and thanks for supporting The Richie Allen Show. It means a lot to me, mate. I hope you had a good day today. I really do. And many more days, and I hope you're having a sup of something strong this evening. Dean Smith, happy birthday. Delaying Brexit. Central theme running through this programme. Delaying Brexit. The chief negotiator for the European Union, Michel Barnier, says there hasn't been enough progress, surprise, surprise, to move to the next stage of Brexit talks. And despite the fact the UK wants progress and wants to move on to talk about trade deals, that can't happen, he said, because they were still deadlocked. Do you want to hear some of what Barnier had to say today? You don't? Well, tough titty, said the kitty. Here's Barnier.
In her Florence speech, Theresa May explained that the UK would honour the commitments entered into as a member of the Union. And that is an important commitment. This week, however, the UK repeated that it was still not ready to spell out these commitments. There have therefore been no negotiations on this subject. We confined ourselves to technical discussions. Useful discussions, but technical discussions. So on this question, we've reached a state of deadlock, which is very disturbing for thousands of project promoters in Europe, and it's disturbing also for taxpayers.
Yes, the delay is disturbing. What's really disturbing is the delay. Delay, 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 delay. It's treacherous is what it is. In today's Daily Mail, Speaker of the House John Bercow, he said that MPs could stop Brexit anytime they wanted by ignoring the referendum and effectively cancelling the UK's exit from Europe. He's previously, of course, boasted about the fact that he voted to remain. And he said clearly politicians had the power to reject any Brexit deal which would scupper the departure. Parliament can do what it wants, he's quoted as saying, and that MPs were free to vote against the will of their constituents. Where did he make these provocative remarks? Well, he made them at a Hansard Society event in Speaker's House. MPs are not bound to follow the wishes of voters, he says. Of course, in the light of the referendum, there are actors on the stage who are very strongly supportive of Brexit, who will tend to say that the absolute responsibility now of members of Parliament is simply to vote this through. But that's an opinion rather than a constitutional fact, said Bercow. Actors on the stage. So Bercow is hinting at the fact many of those Conservatives who would appear to be in favour of Brexit are really only actors. It's not a constitutional fact, he said. It can be ended at any time. That's lovely. That's lovely. The will of the people means nothing. And that story is directly related to the refusal of the European Union to progress talks. David Icke said to me today, after we did the Dot Connector podcast for the subscribers to davidicke.com, which is great. I recommend you check out davidicke.com and subscribe to that. Not great because of my involvement. It's great to participate in it. David said to me, did you see what Richard Branson said, Rich? I said, I didn't. Now, Branson is a billionaire who lives in the Caribbean, and I am in no danger legally when I say that Branson numbers amongst his friends murderers, war criminals and paedophiles. Yes, he does. He's been saying Brexit will collapse as the older generation dies off. What a nice man. We've got no audio from Branson, but a nice RT producer has voiced the exact words spoken by Branson. Here they are.
The older generation is dying off. Whether there's a second referendum before Brexit happens, I'm sure the Tory party will do their best not to allow that to happen. Within 5 years, there'll be a government in power in Britain that will ask Europe for a chance for Britain to re-enter. I think Britain is going to continue sliding down and down, and that's very sad.
Yes, that's very sad. That's very sad indeed. That was Richard Branson, well, an actor or a producer voicing his opinions. I would say to Richard Branson, I won't swear, but you could say piss off back to building sandcastles and playing hide the dildo with your multimillionaire friends on your island paradise. It's extraordinary. And of course, Branson is just one of many of these people talking about reversing the referendum result. Now, I told you the other night that the Treasury was colluding with Brussels to make it difficult for the government in the negotiations, didn't I? Imagine the treachery. Bernard Jenkin MP told the... He's a Tory MP, a Conservative Party MP. He told Sky News Adam Bolton that the Treasury had a Remain mindset. Listen to this in case you missed it.
I am not advocating anybody be appointed or sacked. This is, I'm only interested in the policy.
No, but you're attacking the Treasury. The man in charge of the Treasury is Philip Hammond. I think Should he go?
I think the Treasury has got a mindset that is very pro-Remain.
Including the Chancellor.
I think the Chancellor... I'm not talking about the Chancellor. I'm talking the Treasury as an institution has got a very Remain mindset. But they were very discredited after the referendum when their dire forecasts didn't come true. We were meant to have another half a million unemployed by now, and employment's carried on growing.
Yeah, pretty much, right. Bolton was trying to needle him. Should they go? Should they go? Should they go? He wouldn't be committed on that, or he wouldn't commit himself on it. But former Chancellor of the Exchequer, Nigel Lawson, who's now Lord Lawson, he went a step further today. He spoke on the BBC Daily Politics programme and he said Hammond, that's Philip Hammond, the current Chancellor, should indeed be sacked for briefing with the European Union against the Prime Minister.
Is he undermining these negotiations, Philip Hammond, and undermining the government?
Yeah, that may not be his intention, but I fear that he is.
So what should Theresa May do?
Well, I think probably a reshuffle.
And should he be reshuffled to?
That's for her to decide.
Right, but he shouldn't be Chancellor any longer because you think he's holding up these negotiations.
Yeah, I fear that he is unhelpful. Yeah, I fear that what he is doing, he may not intend it, but in practice, what he is doing is very close to sabotage.
Don't you think that Jacob Rees-Mogg and Bernard Jenkin, as we heard from Anna Soubry there, are the ones that are actually destabilising the negotiations with name-calling of treachery, bordering on the dishonest?
Anna Soubry is a fanatic on this issue, a complete fanatic. That's why you had her on the programme. I know that.
Give Lord Lawson a banana. I cannot believe a man from the Republic of Ireland could find any common ground with Nigel Lawson. But then again, I don't identify as an Irish socialist anymore. Lawson is right. The reason you invite her on is because she's a fanatic and the BBC couldn't be any more fanatically pro-European Union. Good for Lawson. Sack every one of them. But Hammond won't be sacked. Why won't he be sacked? Because as we saw the other day, May will not commit to Brexit and couldn't answer a simple question when she was on LBC and speaking with her old friend Ian Dale.
If there was a Brexit vote now, would you vote Brexit? Because you voted Remain in the referendum. Have you changed your mind?
Well, I don't answer hypothetical questions, but I voted Remain. I voted Remain for good reasons at the time, but circumstances move on. I mean, I think the important thing now is that I think we should all be focused on delivering Brexit.
Absolutely.
And delivering the best deal. But you're asking me to say, how would I vote in a vote now against a different background, a different international background, a different economic background, potentially?
You can't tell me that you would vote leave now. I mean, Jeremy Hunt, when I interviewed him at the conference, he said he voted Remain in the referendum. He was the chief advocate of Remain. He said now he would vote for Brexit because he says George Osborne's economic predictions did not come true. And he said that he was fed up with the belligerent attitude of the European Commission. Now, if he says he could change his mind, I don't quite understand why you can't, seeing as you are Prime Minister leading us into Brexit.
Yes, and I'm Prime Minister ensuring that I'm going to deliver Brexit for the British people.
But you can't tell me that you would now vote Leave in a referendum.
Because I think, Ian, when you come, I could sit here and I could say, oh, I'd still vote Remain or I'd vote Leave, just to give you an answer to that question. I'm being open and honest with you. What I did last time round was I looked...
Yes, of course, she could have said, of course, Ian, I would vote Brexit. Have you been listening to me over the last few months? I see a bright, prosperous future for the UK outside the European Union. If I didn't vote Brexit tomorrow, that would make me a liar. I know I voted Remain last time, but I am fully committed to Brexit. It's all she had to say. Yes, I would vote Brexit. But of course she wouldn't. Liars and saboteurs, every single one of them. And Brexit will never happen, ever, if it's left up to these liars and criminals. It's as simple as that. Or, as my learned friend and colleague says, it'll be a Brexit not worth having at all, some sort of associate membership. And that's what they want. They with a capital they, the royal they. Now you might have heard on the news, there's a lot I could talk about. The US and Israel and UNESCO, all of these stories are covered on davidicke.com. I don't have time to get into them today. And you're probably wondering why I'm not getting stuck into the Israeli-US coalition and all of that. I won't today. We will do it on other days. I want to talk briefly about Sally Ann Jones, the British IS recruiter, allegedly, was killed in a US drone strike in Syria in June. That's according to the United States military and the Sun newspaper, who broke the story. She's from Chatham in Kent, allegedly went to join Islamic State after converting to Islam and going to Syria 4 years ago. Now, the BBC security correspondent Frank Gardner said that Jones had been a useful propaganda agent for IS on social media and that her death would be significant. Whitehall officials have declined to comment publicly. However, they haven't denied it. Michael Fallon alluded to it, the Defence Secretary, today, but wouldn't say too much about it. US sources are adamant that she was killed in an unmanned drone strike in June. Have a listen to Brett Velikovich, former elite force member. That's what they're calling them, elite force, Delta Force, that's right, elite Delta Force member. This guy's a drone operator, or at least he was anyway. Here he is speaking with Kay Burley of Sky News.
When it comes to Sally Jones, you know, in my opinion, look, you know, good riddance her. She deserves everything that had coming to her. She is a terrorist. She is an enemy of the state. And, you know, when it comes to the criteria that's required to actually conduct a drone strike, it looks like, from what I know so far in this case, that if she has, in fact, 100% been confirmed killed, that it was done legally and it was justifiable.
Challenge, though, is that there was a 12-year-old boy in that vehicle, or we think she was in a vehicle when she was killed. There was a child in the vehicle as well. That complicates right. matters, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Look, there's a requirement for a near certainty for us to ensure that we're not going after non-combatants. I think there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered here. But I can tell you, for somebody that's been within this program, that's hunted down thousands of terrorists, I can tell you that we do everything we can to make sure that civilians and non-combatants are not killed. I can't tell you how many terrorists I let go because they were rolling around with women or children, and we wanted to make sure that they weren't hurt. I don't know any commander that would ever call the shot to take a strike knowing that a child would be harmed in the process. And so I think what we're going to find out here is that even though they believed they had the near certainty that there was no child involved, that that there may be some other information here that they didn't know there was a kid in the vehicle, if that was the case.
Brett Velikovich. Thank God for humanitarians like Brett Velikovich, who's hunted down thousands of terrorists, but always holds off from pressing the button on the joystick when he sees jihadis rolling around with women and children.
I can't tell you how many terrorists I let go because they were rolling around with women or children, and we wanted to make sure that they weren't hurt.
So when jihadists, Wahhabi Salafist jihadists, are not blowing people to pieces, when they're not cutting people's heads off, they're rolling around meadows with women and children. Thank God for humanitarians like Brett Velikovich, and thank God for the United States of America. America, fuck yeah. Not a single journalist on UK television today is asking how is it acceptable that a UK citizen can be murdered extrajudicially by the United States of America while travelling in a car with her 12-year-old son. Now, don't for a minute equate that with some perceived sympathy for those who would cut people's heads off and murder people in the barbarous way this group of lunatics have been doing. This group of Salafist Wahhabi lunatics who, by the way, are Saudis and were given everything they needed to go on their campaign of terror by our intelligence services. Don't forget that for a minute. But I've no sympathy for these people. But there's no evidence that Jones has done anything herself. It's all hearsay. It's all newspaper talk. We have a situation where UK citizens can be blown to pieces overseas by the United States of America, and there isn't a single question being asked in UK media today. 20 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live here in the great city of Manchester on Fab Radio 2. Do check out fabradiointernational.com. We're on davidicke.com as well. And, of course, we're broadcasting live on TuneIn Radio. Very quick break. Back in a minute. And when I do return, Maggie Oliver will be with me back shortly.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Right, welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 23 minutes past the hour. My first guest is a remarkable woman. When she worked as a detective for Greater Manchester Police, she worked on murders, rapes and child protection issues. She was instrumental in bringing the Rochdale grooming gang to justice. Now, it was back in 2004 that she first warned her superiors that large numbers of Asian men were violently abusing white girls. She had overwhelming evidence, but the case was closed down. In November 2010, she was asked to join Operation Span, which was a huge investigation into the abuse in Rochdale. The first investigation in 2008 had been a disaster. Our guest was assured that what had happened in 2004 would not happen again, but it did happen again. She spent months with victims documenting their abuse, collecting evidence, conducting interviews. Terrific forensic work. And she played a massive part in building a rock-solid case. But her superiors didn't want to proceed. So she spent a year at Greater Manchester Police asking questions and pleading for the force to proceed against the men involved. They didn't, and she resigned so she could go public. You might have seen the excellent BBC drama Three Girls, which tells her story. If you haven't seen it, it's available online. Let's welcome to the programme Maggie Oliver. Maggie, thanks so much for coming on. How are you?
I'm fine, Richie.
thank you for inviting me on your show.
Great to have you on. And I meant what I said. You're a remarkable woman and immensely courageous. I'm going to start by asking you, Maggie, is this still happening, not just here in the Northwest, but elsewhere? Is it happening to girls who are not being believed and not being listened to?
Well, I would say, of course, it's still happening. The cases that have gone to court in the last 2 or 3 years are just really scraping the surface. I do believe, or I'm hopeful, that we are seeing a watershed moment. I think that with the transmission of three girls and the publicity surrounding that, I don't believe that the authorities can pretend anymore that this isn't a real problem. So I believe that the public pressure that has followed transmission of that programme and the Betrayed Girls has meant that this kind of sexual abuse can no longer be swept under the carpet in the way that it has been since the early 2000s.
Now, the police themselves, and I know, depending on which programme you listen to or which newspaper you read, the police get a lot of stick, sometimes justifiably, sometimes not. And I often think, you know, be a policeman or be a policewoman before you criticise them. But they've taken a lot of criticism. Are you convinced, and I know you're not working with the police anymore, are you convinced that they've learned the lessons of the massive mistakes they made with you in terms of proceeding with these cases and taking them seriously? Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear, Maggie. Can you hear us? Right, we've had a momentary problem there. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just very quickly disconnect and reconnect there. She's on a mobile device, but she's got a solid connection there. So let's get her back on. Maggie Oliver is talking to us live from Altrincham in South Manchester. Maggie, we lost you momentarily. I hope you can hear us again.
Hello?
Maggie, we're getting you loud and clear. Can you not hear us?
I didn't hear you. No, you dropped off. I don't know why. Sorry.
Not a problem, but you can hear us now loud and clear.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. I was asking you before we were briefly disconnected there. Are you convinced that the senior detectives and senior management at police forces in this country have learned from what happened to you and that what happened to you couldn't happen again? Do you believe that?
No, I actually don't believe that. And it doesn't make me happy to say that. But I would refer to what's just happened in relation to Mike Veal, the chief constable of Wiltshire Police, in his struggle to submit the report into his investigation or his force's investigation into allegations of sexual abuse against Ted Heath. Now, he has been pilloried in the press, but he has been subjected to the most horrific pressure to suppress that report. Now, when you become a police officer, every police officer, whatever rank they are today, swears an oath of attestation in which you promise that you will act with fairness, with impartiality, with integrity, that you will uphold fundamental human rights, but that you will do all those things according to the law. Now, Mike Veal's report followed the lines of evidence, but the pressure that he's been put under to suppress that report comes from politicians. Now, the job of a police officer is not to do the bidding of politicians. It is to uphold the law and prosecute offenders where they are seen to break the law. So the very fact that he has been subjected to such horrendous pressure not to make that report public leads me to believe absolutely that, you know, politicians are still becoming involved in what should be a policing matter.
This is really important, and I want to come back to Mike Veal in a second, because you are adamant that your progression into the investigations in Rochdale, you and your team, was hampered because of Home Office pressure. Why do you still believe that, and what made you believe that at the time?
At the time, Richard, I didn't, you know, this has been a long journey for me.
Yeah.
It's made me ill. I lost my husband. He died of bowel cancer. I lost my little granddaughter before she was 3 years old. But the 2 years that I spent as a serving police officer, well, almost 2 years, trying to be listened to and going to through every rank within GMP, from chief superintendent to chief constable. I went to the IPCC, who wouldn't speak to me because I was a serving police officer. I went to the children's commissioner. I went to the Home Office. Nobody wanted to hear. I was only a detective. I was basically told that you're a detective constable. You do, senior officers make decisions and you do as you're told. And if you can't accept that, then maybe you were in the wrong job. Now, so I didn't make the decision lightly to speak out. But at the time, perhaps in the very early days, I laid the responsibility for not properly investigating the allegations of victims in Rochdale. I initially thought that failure lay perhaps with one or two supervisors on the job. That's how naive I was at the start of this journey. But I think that the last 5 years, I have, you know, it's been on my mind for part of every day for all those 5 years. And the first 2 years, I was really ill. I couldn't sleep. I didn't know what was going on. I did question my own sanity because I could not believe what I was seeing. But what has transpired in the past 5 years, you know, common sense tells you that this was not a problem of Greater Manchester Police. You look around the country, you know, whether you look at Rotherham, at Rochdale, at Oxford, Telford, Doncaster now, every one of those cities and areas have now had cases involving grooming and serious sexual abuse of vulnerable white children, and the perpetrators or the offenders in those trials have been predominantly Pakistani men. Now, I don't believe it's a coincidence that those cases are now starting to come to the forefront. I believe that they were suppressed or covered up, if you want to say that, at a national level for a long time. And that is my personal belief. You know, I can't prove what's happened in Doncaster, but my personal opinion, I think it is, I would find it unbelievable that this desire to cover up this particular kind of crime hasn't come from the government, whichever government that is. It isn't a party political point. And I would point at what has just recently happened with Mike Veal to add weight to that opinion. I just feel it's irrefutable that is what has happened.
I want to say this genuinely. It's incredible that you put up with all of that. You know, it's easy to use the word like nonsense, but it's more than nonsense. I don't know how you coped with that, with the difficulties of trying to get through to people and being fobbed off and being, you know, and the stress you went through, which you detailed in several interviews you gave with national newspapers. I really mean that, Maggie. It's incredible. You're an absolute credit that you came through that, you know.
Oh, thank you. But I've never really spoken about my journey, because for me, it was never about me. I do believe that I'm a very strong person, but the thing was that I was involved in Operation Augusta back in 2004 and 5, and I was at the call front in that job as well. And I built up relationships with children and actually with social workers back on that job, who had been trying to get this particular kind of crime addressed for a long time. And GMP buried that job. They allowed it to die a death. We had, I think it was 97 offenders or suspects on a database at that point. You know, we had a whole list of children who we knew, and each of their social workers knew that they were being sexually abused. And, you know, I knew of locations where this was happening. We had registration numbers. That job was buried. It happened. It went to the major incident team, and my husband at that point was terminally ill, and in his last 3 months I went off work, but actually sort of relatively happy in the thought that you know, my job was done. There'd been a small team of officers who had uncovered the evidence to prosecute serious sexual offenders, serial sexual offenders. And I went off thinking that the job was a runner. We had the full major incident team allocated to that job, and everything was being put on a database. Now, when I came back to work after my husband died, I was just astonished that the job had died a death. Nobody had been arrested and interviewed or charged with any of the serious sexual offences that we knew were going on. But in my own, there was a gap. First of all, in my own knowledge, and also I wasn't in a good place. I've got four children. I just lost, you know, my husband of 21 years. I didn't feel that I had the full evidence to. I did try to address it with senior officers, but was fobbed off. So when I was asked to join Operation Span, and the drama covers this because, but only in a very reduced way, because it was about the girls, you know. For me, it was about the girls who had been let down. But I saw history repeating itself. So
you saw it again, and you know, we sometimes hear from victims of sexual abuse. I'm going to be honest. I've not spoken with anybody who was a victim in Rochdale or Rotherham, but you know, victims of abuse elsewhere, shall we say. There's no doubt that decisions were made in 2004 and in 2010, 2009, 2010, decisions that meant that abusers could go on and abuse. I don't want to be kind of, you know, overdramatic here, but aren't there certain people working in GMP or maybe retired that really should be answering questions in an inquiry as to why the case was buried in 2004, right?
Most certainly, and I feel that really this has come into the public domain, I believe, because I've spoken out publicly, and it's been been an uphill struggle and a battle. But now and I'm actually being interviewed by a team. Andy Burnham has put together, as a result of the public outcry surrounding three girls and betrayed girls, Andy Burnham announced a review of what happened or what went wrong in Rochdale, in line with what was with the inquiry in Rotherham. And I'm actually going to be interviewed or speak to them in a couple of weeks. Now, also, I know that GMP have now referred Operation Augusta to the Professional Standards Department for the first time. So they are looking at what failures there were. I'm not sure whether I have any in them coming out with a truthful outcome. I would like to see them interviewing some of the victims that have never been interviewed. They have cherry-picked who they have spoken to, all these reviews that have been done. To this day, you know, they've never spoken to me. All the girls that I'm talking about have never once been interviewed by any of these teams or any of these reviews or inquiries into what went wrong. And colleagues of mine who were in senior positions in Operation Span have also never been approached. So you'll have to forgive me if I don't have a great deal of faith real desire to uncover the truth. I firmly believe that the only reason we are moving forward now is because the media have focused on it, because the drama went out and reached a mass audience of, I think it was 4 million people who watched Three Girls. So it can't be concealed anymore.
Can I ask a question on that, Maggie? Yeah. Can I ask a question? First of all, I just want to remind our listeners, we've got a special lady on the programme tonight, Maggie Oliver. You'd have seen Three Girls on the BBC, which is based on what happened to Maggie, who trying to blow the whistle, trying to investigate a grooming gang in Rochdale back in 2004, and then a few years ago, and all the obstacles put in her way and all the corruption. Amazing woman, I don't mind saying that again. We've got Maggie for another 15 or so minutes, just before 8 o'clock we've got a par company. I'm glad she's on the programme. I want to ask you this, Maggie, because I did mention that victims of sexual abuse have been on this programme, and we always vet people before they come on and, you know, make sure that their ducks are in a row, that they're telling us the truth. One of the things that we've heard from people is that they understand what the MP Sarah Chapman has said, and they understand what the former Labour MP Anne Crier said about racism being an issue, about the police being scared of being called racist. But a lot of victims say to us that they believe that that itself is part of the cover-up, that really wasn't the motivation for not investigating, because there is a growing belief, with some evidence to support it, that there is a pretty powerful paedophile network operating in this country, and that maybe this was an Asian grooming gang. There's no doubt about that. We should be able to call it an Asian grooming gang without being called racist. That is a fact. But the idea that the police were scared of that might be another smokescreen, that maybe, just maybe, there were people concerned that the unearthing of what was going on, and you were obviously doing an amazing job, you and your team, might lead to bigger and more powerful people. What do you say to that?
I think it's... I believe that was part of the reason that this kind of sexual crime was allowed to develop unchecked, really. I think people were frightened of being called racist because it's irrefutable that this particular kind of sexual crime, the perpetrators are predominantly, and it really isn't Asian men. I mean, they're not Chinese, or they are predominantly Pakistani men. I am not saying for one minute, number one, that only Pakistani men are sexual abusers, nor am I saying that we don't have problems with lots of other kinds of sexual crime. I mean, you know, what Mike Veal's talking about is abuse going to high places. We only have to look at Jimmy Savile. But what I'm saying is that the law is there to address sexual abuse, and it doesn't matter where those abusers come from. If a man is guilty of having sex, for instance, with a 12-year-old child, and he gets that child with special needs that the drama talked about, Ruby, but I know her personally, 12 years old, she's being abused by a Pakistani man. We have a fetus, we've no doubt about paternity. Even that man was never charged with a rape. You know, these are questions. If that was my son who got a 12-year-old pregnant, I would bet my house on it that he'd be charged with a rape. So there are other things going along here. But, you know, the law is the law, and it shouldn't be there to cherry-pick which parts of it we use and which we don't. You know, a paedophile is a paedophile. Absolutely. And whether it's Jimmy Savile or whether it's, Ted Heath, or if it's politicians, the police should not be have their hands bound by people in high places saying we're not going to follow the line of evidence down that road. That is not why I joined the police. I joined to protect the vulnerable. And if you don't address this crime, and if you don't prosecute the paedophiles, wherever they come from, they don't suddenly change their behaviour. They continue to abuse, whether it's children or, you know, that abuse continues. And that's why I felt that morally I had to give my job up, because I knew in 2012 that this crime had been going on from at least 2000. And people like Anne Crier had been trying to get it addressed. I don't believe that the racial elements were the only factor that prevented this kind of crime being
tackled either. Yeah, which is what I was getting at.
I feel that partly in the early 2000s, the government again put performance indicators in place. They told police forces that they had to meet quotas, and performance indicators were only reflecting acquisitive crime, so burglaries, robberies, theft from a vehicle. Senior police officers were getting bonuses and incentive payments based on how they solved those kinds of crimes. Well, you know, logically, you think of these children who have been abused in the on-street grooming. They were not coming knocking on the doors of the police. We didn't have lots of records of rapes that were unsolved. So why turn that stone over? You know, the one of the big issues for me still is that of the many kids that I know and that I still support today, some of them are like, you know, extended family to me now, because I've sort of held the hand through the process, and they are good kids. But for many of the girls, even to this day, the allegations that they made to the police, and I mean, I'm talking about what was said to me, but to many other officers, those disclosures of sexual abuse were never officially recorded by GMP. You know, there is not a crime raise. There should be a crime raise for every allegation of a crime that a member of the public makes to a police officer. It's a deliberate neglect of duty by people in high places that those allegations have never been recorded.
It's gross misconduct, at the very least, isn't it? At the very least.
It's at the very, very least, yeah. You record it. Yeah. And if there is insufficient to arrest or insufficient to prosecute, you make a written record on the police system as to why you have made that decision. But if you never record it, nobody is accountable, and there is no audit trail going back, unless people like me are still banging on about it. You know, who's going to listen to the kids? You know, I could tell you of one of the girls who had problems very recently, and because there's no record of her having been a victim of these gangs and raped dozens of times, you know, when she makes a call to the police, there is no record there, and nobody wants to listen. That there are still consequences today, you know, of those failures. But actually, that should not even be, it shouldn't even be being discussed, because every allegation of a crime should be recorded, whether that's a criminal damage or a theft, whether or not the police officer believes it. You record it, you investigate it with, you know, with fairness and with impartiality and honesty, you know, and that's why I signed, you know, that was the job I promised to do. So how can I continue to do my job when I know full well that that is not happening? And ultimately, I really didn't feel I had any choice, but it took me 15 months to take the leap. And in the meantime, I had collapsed at work, and even subsequently, you know, the chief constable of the time, Peter Fire, when he's interviewed on the radio about when I did my file on four, he was saying that I was this woman who had somehow become too emotionally involved and I'd lost the plot. And what I was saying was, the implication was that I was being unreasonable and that it wasn't right. Well, it was right. And, you know, I had written a letter to him. I tried to go and see him. He also says he's met me on many occasions and he's had many conversations with me. Well, let me stay on the record that I, to this day, I have never had a conversation with him. He has still never met me. So all these things are, you know, they're presented as facts and as the truth. There are lots of things in there that are not the truth. But, you know, GMP is a powerful organization, and one voice speaking out against what, you know, is the propaganda says that, you know, that is not how it is. Well, that is how it was, and we shouldn't be 17 or 18 years further on now and still talking about, you know, about failures from 20 years ago.
Well, so many people wouldn't know about this if it wasn't for you. I just want to point out as well, I absolutely agree with you. I do believe that some sections, and please God, it's a minority of the UK Asian community, particularly in some sections of the Pakistani community, there is a problem with how women are seen and how white girls are seen. I absolutely believe that, and I have no doubt that's absolutely true. I want to ask you, Maggie Oliver's on the line, by the way, folks. Great that she's come on the show tonight. We've got another 10 minutes and that's about it. Unfortunately.
Can I just say very briefly about what you've just said?
Yeah.
I really hope one of the main reasons why I wanted this in the public domain was to generate an honest debate, and that debate needs to include in the community from which the abusers have come.
Absolutely.
And that is really what I would like to, I mean, and you are absolutely right. I mean, I've been on the Asian Network and given interviews to, you know, to them, and this is a tiny minority of that community, but I believe that it needs to be addressed. It needs to be talked about, you know, honestly, just as it does with, you know, with, I mean, I'm mentioning Ted Heath. I haven't seen the file.
Maggie's just dropped out there momentarily. I hope it's only momentarily. Maggie Oliver on the line to us from Altrincham. The call just dropped out, but I'll call her back again. She's on a mobile device there. Extraordinary lady. Courageous lady to put up with everything she put up with.
Hello?
You're back. Yeah, sorry, mate. You just dropped out momentarily.
You keep losing me.
I keep losing you, but you're only down the road in Altrincham.
I keep cutting you off,
yeah. You're in Altrincham, so I could walk down the road to you. Maggie, what you're saying is really, really important. You're coming around to Ted Heath, so let me ask you this. And you're right to say it's a minority, and you're right to say we need to have an adult discussion about it. You said in your excellent piece in the Mail on Sunday, you mentioned Tim Fortescue and what Fortescue said back in the 1990s on BBC television, and God only knows why he wasn't interviewed under caution after that, but that's another matter. You talked about Fortescue. We've talked about this at length. I've had MPs on this programme over the years from all sides of the House. You saw the nonsense that Mike Veal had to put up with. It all lends to or leads to very, very, very worried people in the establishment. We have to say that, don't we? Because Fortescue basically said, you know, boys are being abused willy-nilly. MPs, it was a common thing. You know, how he wasn't interviewed under caution, I have no idea. And then we saw what happened to Mike Veal. What's going on? What do you suspect is going on?
Well, you know, we have people in high places who are very powerful. You know, I hear all sorts of things. I'm in contact with lots of people now, and obviously I can't make libelous comments on the radio.
No.
But, you know, the question begs to be asked. You know, all the files that went missing, I think there were 45 or 46 files that have you know, very strangely gone missing. Ted, you know, the victims who have talked about Ted Heath, I'm led to believe that there were in excess of 20. But the ones that they have reduced them to are seven that are very credible witnesses, is what I'm led to believe. But if what is being said is true and there is a paedophile ring operating or which operated, you know, perhaps the value of the report, yes, Ted Heath is dead, so, you know, but what about other people that these victims are mentioning? You know, many of those probably are not dead. I would imagine that there are quite a lot of people in high places who may be looking over the shoulder now and feeling a little bit nervous. Just as in the days of, you know, the report into Jimmy Savile, he died, hadn't he, when it came to public attention. But it led to, you know, other investigations and people being interviewed and prosecuted. So I feel that, you know, we have to follow the evidence. We cannot make, you know, it's not for politicians to make a judgment call on which investigations the police carry out and which they don't, because then we're in a scenario of, you know, that is not what the law is there for, unless I... And if we are going to say that that is how we carry on in the future, then we need to have a radical overhaul of the law.
Absolutely.
And how we look at things.
You know, I was talking on the programme yesterday about elites and how when you look at the religious elite in Ireland, the Catholic elite, not only in Ireland but in America and other elites, where you see elites, you often see institutional or endemic child abuse. I'm of the belief, you know, I don't have the absolute evidence, but I've heard from so many people, I'm of the absolute belief that there is and has been a paedophile network operating at the highest levels of our society. I do believe, not because I want to believe it, but I do believe it. What do you think of Alexis J's chances, Maggie, of getting to, and we've just lost Maggie again. We're going to ask her one final question anyway. We'll get her back on, hopefully. I'm going to ask her one final question about the chances of Alexis J getting to the bottom of it. Maggie Oliver is on the line. Hopefully we'll get her back momentarily, because we've only got a couple of minutes left anyway. Maggie, you dropped out again, but don't worry about that, because we've only got a couple of minutes left anyway. Thanks for bearing with us. Listen, I was just going to ask you, what are the chances of Alexis J, who's currently heading up the inquiry, of course, into child sexual abuse, the independent inquiry, what are the chances of her actually getting to the bottom of what's gone on in this country? Do you trust that process?
I don't trust the processes, but I have to say that what Baroness J did in relation to her investigation in Rotherham was inspirational. I hope she has the courage to continue. That's what I would say.
Maggie, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm going to make it my business to buy you a glass of wine or a vodka and coke or whatever it is you have in Altrincham. And I'm a man of my word. You're only down the road. I'm going to buy you a drink.
Okay.
To everybody who's ever been a victim of sexual abuse, whether they're listening in the UK or Ireland or in Europe where we have listeners, you're an angel, because you didn't bow down to it. You didn't go away, which most people would have done. You had all the difficult things in your life, your husband, God love him, and everything else, and you stuck with it. And you got the public to hear the story of those girls. You're a marvellous woman, Maggie. Thanks so much for everything. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for listening to me.
Not at all. We'll talk again soon. That was the brilliant Maggie Oliver, live on the line there from Altrincham. And as I said earlier on, BBC documentary, what do they call them, docudramas, are available. I think they're still available on the BBC iPlayer, which accurately tell the story of Maggie and what happened, and those girls, of course. As she said, the girls are the most important people in the story there. Remarkable woman, and she had some remarkable things to say. It's 3.5 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and TuneIn Radio. Plenty of tweets came in during that. We'll have a look at some of those to see what other people are tweeting. Go to twitter.com and put Richie Allen Show into the search Twitter bar, and if you press enter, you'll see what people are tweeting to me, so you will. And it is Thursday, 13th, not easy for me to say, the 13th of October 2017. Thank God for people like Maggie Oliver. I mean that as well. Her and others. This is Drake, back in a couple of minutes with more on your Richie Allen Show. I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I won't show high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. Mark on me, I want your high love and emotion endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home. Oh, oh, oh. I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. Music from Drake on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. It is the 12th today. That's down to my eyesight. It's dreadful, even with my glasses, which I think are nearly 2 years old now. I might have to have an eye test again because I'm looking out of the corner of my eye to my many computer screens. I'm looking in the bottom right-hand corner and I'm seeing 13th. I'm seeing a 1-3 instead of a 1-2, and I'm not that far away and I'm wearing my glasses. I need to do something about that. Thank you for reminding me on Twitter, eagle-eared, rabbit-eared listeners. Can't think of anything with better hearing than a rabbit. Maybe an eagle. An eagle. Eagles have very good hearing, don't they? Mice have very good hearing, don't they? Cats, of course. Cats have brilliant hearing. Dogs. Hi to David Stewart Cole, who says that not one social worker who was negligent in Rotherham has been taken off the professional register. That's from David Stewart Cole on Twitter. That's a legitimate point, that. And any inquiry into the failings in Rochdale over the 15 years certainly should take into account the behaviour of social workers there. No doubt about that. Now, I'm mindful of the fact that because Paul Sweeney says bat-eared, yes, bats have amazing hearing, I'm mindful of the fact that social workers do get a bit of a battering on programmes like this, because we generally hear from people who've had their children wrongfully taken from them. And a social worker was in touch with the programme very recently, in fact in the last couple of days, to say that they were tired of the one-sided diatribe against social workers. And I said, well, I have invited social workers through official channels to come on the programmes in the past to talk about it, and they won't. Now, I can kind of understand that. They're not permitted to do so by their employers. But I said, look, it's difficult to get balance. And all the evidence points to, in fact, big story in the news today and yesterday, 35,000 children were taken into care last year. You know, there are serious failings, and there is a £1 billion industry in this country where the emphasis is on removing the child from the household as a matter of course, no matter what. Now, I think it goes far, far deeper than that. But on the surface, that is happening. Social workers do maybe seem to get a battering on the programme, but you call what you see. And what we see in our investigations of the family courts is we see corrupt social workers. But of course, not every social worker is like that. I know that. Karen says, at the end of the day, these are children. And they are being abused. And people should be shouting about this from the rooftops. A lot of people don't know about it, Karen. Susan tweets, we need to educate our young to love and respect themselves. Have the difficult conversation about who touches them and where. That's a good point, Susan. That question should be, excuse me, that conversation, though, should be between the parents of children and the children. I do not believe that, in primary schools anyway, that we should have teachers talking to children about matters concerning sexuality. I really don't believe it. And I know that the Department of Education wants to introduce such discussions with very young children, and I think it's very dangerous. That's my opinion anyway. Hi to David Mortimer, who's very interested in this issue. He's been tweeting me. Follow David Mortimer on Twitter. It's at UK Fathers. At UK Fathers. He tweets a lot, and he writes a lot about these issues as well. Hi to Faisal, hi to Peter, and hi to Nancy. Nancy is talking about Hollywood, and we're going to talk about Hollywood in a couple of minutes with Liz Crokin, who should be standing by and will join us imminently. This is your Richie Allen Show. It is the 12th of October. It's Thursday's programme, live on DavidIke.com. Bookmark DavidIke.com, because everything ever written and everything ever analysed about child sex abuse in this country, you'll find it in the archives at davidike.com. And David's been writing about it extensively in his books for many years. And of course, back in 1997, 1998, he named Edward Heath while Heath was still a sitting MP. Remember, back in a minute.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Welcome back to the programme. 7 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show. We're live on Fab Radio 2, davidike.com and richieallen.co.uk. Just to let you know, the next edition of Jamie Ike's Friday Night won't be tomorrow. It'll be a week tomorrow. So not tomorrow the 13th, but it'll be the 20th. That's a week tomorrow. Jamie will be in the studio live on Friday at 7 p.m. UK time, and he'll have a fantastic show and he'll have a brilliant guest with him. I won't tell you who that is, let Jamie tell you that. But between 6 and 7, an hour before Jamie, I'll be on doing a music programme, basically playing the music of the awakening, let's call it that, and playing some chill music on Friday evening, very early Friday evening, and I'll be building up to Jamie. We'll be live at 7 o'clock in the studio. That's a week tomorrow. All right, 8 minutes past the hour. And it's time to dial up our next guest. So I'll do that. While we do that, we'll have some music. Just to remind you, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. But let me tell you this. It's kind of better to tweet. The email is temperamental at the moment. There are website issues that we're dealing with. And I'm not always getting emails to the show as they come in, which is a problem. I sometimes get them 2-3 days later. Sometimes I don't get them at all. So the best way to leave a comment for the programme, and in fact it's very interactive because you can interact with other listeners who are tweeting, is to go to Twitter and leave a comment for me there. Just include @RichieAllenShow in the tweet. And if you do that, I will read your tweet and I will read them out when I get them. Okay, simple as that. Right, where was I? Right, yes, some music, that's right. What have I done there? Ah, there you go. One of those things. I thought we might have more gremlins to deal with, but not, we're all right. So, Liz Crokin joins us, and she'll be with us in a minute. Until then, here's some Duran Duran. We're going to talk Harvey Weinstein, and we're going to talk Hollywood with Liz, who's a terrific journalist and author. Back in a minute. Turned on the lights, the TV, and the radio. Right, Duran Duran, Ordinary World on the Richie Allen Show. We are Europe's most listened to independent radio show. That's a fact. Broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. Our next guest was on this programme a few months ago. We were delighted to make her acquaintance. She's a terrific journalist, an award-winning author and journalist and political pundit. And her work has been seen in the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun-Times, Marie Claire, US Weekly, and many other publications. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Croak. And by the way, her book Malice was terrifically reviewed, and you can find that at all good online retailers as well. She's been following for some time now because, of course, she has personal interest in it. Elite paedophile rings operating in the United States and in Hollywood, in DC, of course. And I know she's following the revelations about Harvey Weinstein. She's following those very closely as well. It's great to welcome back to the programme Liz Croken. Hey, Liz, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Richie? Thank you so much for having me back.
Hey, it's about time. It's been 6 or 7 months since we last spoke, Liz. It's great to have you back on. Do you know,
It's great to be back on, and there's so much to talk about, so I'm looking forward to this.
Brilliant. And we have a good 40 to 45 minutes to chat, if you have that amount of time. So we've plenty of time.
Absolutely. The
Harvey Weinstein story, you don't often see a story that develops not every hour, but almost every 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
How are you reading what came out about him, how it's being reported, and what's really going on? Give us your thoughts, Liz.
Well, no question, it opened a can of worms, right? So this kind of stuff, as you know, and you've reported extensively and very thoroughly, is that the pedophilia and the rapes and the sexual assault, this has been going on in Hollywood and in Washington, D.C. for literally decades. We have elite politicians and elite celebrities that have been involved in taking advantage of women, raping minors, and some people are involved in the more satanic cult side of it, where they literally are involved in raping babies and toddlers and ritualistically abusing them, torturing them, and sacrificing them. So unfortunately, this is all too common in these circles, and it's been going on for years, and it's been greatly covered up. But now that the Harvey Weinstein revelation came out, I believe that he's the first domino to fall, because unfortunately, this is more common than not common in Hollywood circles. And, you know, because I worked for the mainstream media for many years, as you said at the opening of the show, but I particularly covered for years, I worked for the tabloids and I covered Hollywood. And this kind of stuff has been going on for a very, very long time. And like a lot of actresses and producers and directors have come out and said, it was a known secret, a very known and open secret in Hollywood, that Harvey Weinstein was a serial sexual predator. So now that the cat is out of the bag with him, I firmly believe, and we're already seeing this, that he was the first domino to fall. And now I think that this is going to empower victims of not only him, but of other big stars, directors, producers, you name it, in Hollywood. It's going to motivate other victims to come forward. And so this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to start learning a lot about what really goes on in Hollywood, why certain people get the roles that they do, why certain people become rich and famous and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, furthermore, I want people to understand that, you know, one of the reasons why the sexual assault and the pedophilia and the rapes are so rampant in Hollywood, it's because they use the sexual abuse as a form and as a way to control these young actors, these young musicians, and these young stars. So what they'll do is, and I was actually in a documentary about this about a year ago, but there was a woman in the documentary who, her family is very musical, and she's a very, very talented musician. And when she was like, I don't know, 13, 14 years old, and by the way, she came from a poor family, her family got her a record deal at a very young age. And right after her parents signed a million-dollar contract, and this was like at least 2 decades ago, so $1 million was a lot of money back then. When they signed a million-dollar record deal, immediately after they signed that contract, a producer raped her. And this is very common. Lady Gaga's been raped. Kesha's been raped. They've been open about it. And, you know, it's not the sexual assault is not just because these people are perverted and they like to rape people, which is true, but they use the sexual abuse to control these celebrities and these stars and musicians. And what they'll do is they'll start the abuse right after they've signed some deal. And they always, you know, try to choose children that come from very vulnerable families. They choose and they prey on children that come from poor families where the father's an alcoholic and maybe the mom's a drug addict. And they choose the most vulnerable children because they're the ones that are the most desperate and they're the easiest to control. So this game has been going on in Hollywood for a very long time, and that's why we see so much sexual abuse in Hollywood.
Liz, this is really important stuff. By the way, folks, follow Liz Crokin. Liz is as honest a journalist as you can possibly come across. You know, like any other good journalist, I wouldn't agree with Liz on 100% of things. That'd be there would be something wrong if that was the case, but I agree with her 99% of the time. Her work is excellent. She's really, really, really good. Liz, there are two things I want to ask before we talk about what's going on in more detail in Hollywood. And I'm going to ask, by the way, you're doing something that's quite extraordinary, and I think it's putting you in danger. Now, I know you're not a virtue signaller. There are too many of those in the independent media. It's all about me, and I'm being attacked for spilling the truth. I know you're not one of those, but I worry about you, because you're talking about Dennis Hastert, and you're also asking questions around some of the people that would have known him. You're asking pertinent questions, and I want to talk about those in a few minutes. But before we talk about those questions, is there any... We have to consider... You just said there that it's widely known what was going on in Hollywood for years. Could it be argued that the reason the lamestream media didn't go after it is for fear that they'd be accused of anti-Semitism because the Jewish presence in Hollywood is all pervasive. Now, I'm not anti-Jew, Liz, or I don't hate the Jews or anything like that, but we've seen in England Asians who've been abusing children weren't investigated because the investigators feared they would be called racist. Have people not gone down the route of exposing paedophiles in Hollywood for fear they'd be called anti-Semitic? What do you think?
You know, I never really thought about it that way. And I mean, that could be possible. But I think that the reason why people have stayed silent for so long was, well, first of all, the mainstream media is involved in pedophilia. They're involved in child sex trafficking, okay? That's number one. So that's why the mainstream media has not covered pedophiles and not covered child sex trafficking. I know this firsthand because I've been censored from the mainstream media for trying to expose this in the mainstream media. And the reason why the mainstream media doesn't cover it is because very powerful people, and I'm not saying everyone in the mainstream media is a pedophile, okay? But I'm saying that there are very powerful people in the mainstream media that are tied to the pedophilia. They're involved in the child sex trafficking. And those people are controlling the narrative, and they have not allowed stories like this to come out. I mean, look at NBC. They've known about this for years. Ronan Farrow said that they basically squashed his story. They lied. They tried to make it seem like he didn't have enough. He had police records. He had on-camera interviews, I think, with 8 women. I mean, he had a thoroughly sourced story that was ready to go that any reasonable lawyer for a publication would have approved. So they lied about that. And it's like, you know, well, why didn't they cover that story? Why didn't they break that story? And it's because they're protecting sexual predators and pedophiles. There's people in the media that are protecting sexual predators and pedophiles. You know, look at Jacob Schwartz. Jacob Schwartz, he was a top aide for Mayor Bill de Blasio, okay, in New York. And he used to go on CNN as a guest.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
To this day, CNN has not covered the fact that he has been arrested for having thousands and thousands of images of child porn, people raping toddlers, okay? And I actually confronted Jake Tapper at Politicon. There was a political fest in Los Angeles this summer, and I went to the festival to confront some of these people that have been protecting pedophiles and who refuse to cover sex trafficking in the mainstream media. So I confronted Jake Tapper about this, and I got video of it, which I've posted on my blog, and I said, why aren't you covering any of these elite pedophile arrests? Like, why aren't you covering the fact that Jacob Schwartz, who used to go on CNN and works for Mayor Bill de Blasio, was arrested for child porn? Why haven't you covered the fact that Raymond Liddy, who is the assistant attorney general in California, Gordon B. Liddy's son, and he's the one that was involved in the Watergate scandal. These are very powerful politicians. Not even a blip on their website. Absolutely nothing. So the mainstream media is involved with this. And so I don't necessarily think it's because people are afraid that they're going to be accused of being anti-Semitic because there's a lot of high and powerful Jewish people in Hollywood like Harvey Weinstein that are part of this. I think that at the end of the day, the media is involved in child sex trafficking, and that's why they're not covering it. And not only are they involved in it, they have actively covered it up. You know, they actively lied about Pizzagate. They lied about James Elefantis. They lied about Comet Ping Pong. They did not tell the truth. So not only are they not covering it, they are actively
covering
for pedophiles.
They're complicit.
And furthermore, I will say this too, the New York Times, ironically, has promoted pedophilia just a week before the Harvey Weinstein story broke.
How did they do that, Liz? Tell us, how did they promote it?
Okay, so a week before the Harvey Weinstein story broke, there was an op-ed in the New York Times right after Anthony Weiner got his sentencing for sexting with a minor. There was so he's a convicted pedophile. We know Anthony Weiner is a convicted pedophile. So he gets a sentencing. There was an op-ed in the New York Times, and the writers said that she admires Anthony Weiner. And the headline was, "Why I Admire Anthony Weiner." And then she goes on to say that she admires him because he accepted his punishment and he didn't try to say that he has an illness to get out of going to jail. Well, that was a complete and total lie. He did try to get out of going to jail. His lawyers aggressively tried to get him to go out of going to jail. Furthermore, they try to blame him sexting with a minor on the fact that he had a quote-unquote illness. So, you know, you have the New York Times saying that they admire a convicted pedophile, and then they're lying about the reasons on why they admire him. And they've had other stories that are similar to that. So it's very interesting that, you know, about a week later, we have this complete about-face from the New York Times. And I don't know exactly why we've had this complete about face. I've heard different reasons, but there's something going on behind the scenes, and there's something really big going on behind the scenes. And the mainstream media is now being forced to confront this issue. I wrote about this in February. I said, this is going to get so big. Pedogate and sex trafficking in DC and Hollywood is going to get so big that the mainstream media networks have been covering for the pedophilia. They're going to be forced to cover this. And I was right. So something's going on behind the scenes here where they're being forced to cover it. And so, you know, I don't think that it had to do with necessarily people being afraid of being called an anti-Semitic, you know, to come out about Harvey. I think it's more that the people that were protecting him are involved too.
Yeah, for me, Liz, there are elite pedophilia groups all over the world, and they come in different shapes and sizes. You know, we have I mentioned on the show last night and tonight with my first guest, you know, we have the clerical ones. You know, pedophilia is not exclusive to Catholics. It's not exclusive to Muslims. It's not exclusive to Jews. It's an endemic thing. But Hollywood is a Jewish elite, and the media is largely run by Jewish oligarchs and Jewish businessmen and women. And that's why I was throwing that in the mix. I just want to do a quick recap. Yep. Liz Crokin is on the line to us today. It's great to have Liz back on the program. Very, very good journalist. Written for many, many, many well-known mainstream publications. She's been on the case of this pedophilia networks operating in the US for some time now. She's an author as well. Just want to say, Liz, I just want to say, David Icke is listening to the program. And he says, it's amazing to hear Liz, after decades of banging my head, the waters are breaking. He said to me, and he's been covering this since the early 1990s. He has a question, does David, and my friend and colleague Jean-Anne Crowley in Dublin has a question as well. David says that he would like to know why she thinks the New York Times went for Harvey Weinstein. Why did they do it then? And Jean-Anne's question is broadly similar. Why does Liz think that Weinstein has been fed to the pack like this? Why?
Okay, so there's many theories, and I'm still not sure why he was chosen, he was picked. And I know you guys don't agree with this, but I truly believe this with all of my heart, all of my heart. I believe that these pedophiles are going down only because of Trump. And I believe that 100%. To the core of my soul, I have been tracking every single arrest. I've been tracking every single statement that Trump has made about pedophiles. I've tracked, you know, how he's called out pedophiles. Years ago, he was calling out Anthony Weiner. I have tracked the deep state. I have tracked how they try to bring him down. And I've tracked all of the people that are the most anti-Trump, that are banging their head and screaming out against Trump the most, okay? These people are all part of the New World Order. A lot of them are pedophiles, and a lot of them are tied to...
You're back,
and
please.
If they're not pedophiles, they have something to hide, all right? They're criminals. They're involved in some kind of criminal activity. So we have...
We just, Liz has momentarily dropped out there. It's one of those nights, isn't it, for people dropping out? I'm going to get her back on very quickly. I think she's on a mobile device, which sometimes can be problematic. We'll get her back on. I'm not convinced about Trump's part in bringing down pedophiles, of course, but I'm going to listen to Liz. I have my say on this, don't I, a lot, and I'm not convinced about Trump, but I'm going to hear her out. She's very good. Liz Crokin is hopefully going to be back with me in a second. There seems to be a problem there. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a very, very quick break and hopefully we'll sort it out. She's on a mobile device. She might be going somewhere where the signal might be a bit better. So a quick break. Don't go anywhere. Back in a minute with more. This is your Richie Allen Show.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your one 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Right, welcome back. I think Liz is momentarily offline, so there's some issue with her at her end even, which is a pain because we were getting into some interesting territory with Liz there around Donald Trump. And you know, ultimately, one of the things I've learned over the years, it doesn't really matter whether Liz is right or not about Trump's involvement in it. The fact is, something is going on. And it's not just in America. It's going on here, as it went on in Ireland, and it's going on elsewhere. The information is coming to the surface, regardless of who or what is responsible for it. Liz believes that there's evidence that Trump has, under the radar, has been making inroads into outing people and, you know, encouraging prosecutions against people. And I don't know that that's not true. I'm not sure about it. One of the things I was going to mention to Liz was, we did mention the New York Times. That was the newspaper used to expose Weinstein. And if you follow politics in the United States, you will know that the New York Times is pretty much as anti-Donald Trump as any newspaper could be. You know, it's a very pro-Democrat, very pro-Hillary Clinton newspaper. Bill Clinton newspaper, very pro-Obama, very pro-Democratic Party paper. So that kind of, again, flies in the face of the idea that Trump is somehow behind it. I don't know. What I'm very interested in is this area of everybody knew about it. And I mentioned on the programme yesterday, didn't I? I'm a big fan of the books of Mario Puzo. I've read them all. Omerta, The Sicilian. I've read them all. The Godfather, of course. Fools Die. I've read all these books. And he was very, 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 very surprised when he was researching The Godfather. And he was looking at the Johnny Fontaine. I mentioned this yesterday, so I won't labour this point if you heard this yesterday. But he was stunned at the levels of sexual depravity that he witnessed while he was researching what was going on in Hollywood. And a friend of mine has sent me a message, Paul, who says, why would a president who is so pro-Israel, why would that president expose Zionist paedophiles? And again, this is a point I would have made to Liz, and I did make this point to Liz back in February. I asked her this very question. Trump is as pro-Israel and as controlled by Israel a president that the United States have ever had. You know, I don't know. But maybe Trump is not the full shilling. Now, I know that's a very weak argument, right? It's a weak argument. Maybe he's not the full shilling. But maybe there's some merit to what Liz is saying. I don't know. But I don't see it. But then again, I'm not there either. 25 minutes to the top of the hour. She's gone offline. And that is obviously means that for the moment, we can't chat, which is worrying me because there's not very much time left in the programme. But she has said some very, very interesting things about satanic paedophilia and how it was, you know, an open secret in Hollywood. And again, last night we heard the old audio tapes of Corey Feldman, and we might have Liz back, actually. Hang on a second. We do. Liz, you're back.
Oh my God, I was talking. I hope.
Yeah, you went offline momentarily there, and I did wonder, were you still chatting away there? But thanks be to, as we say in the old country, thanks be to Jesus, you're back. Listen, I just want to ask you this, because we've got 15, 16 minutes left on it. Just sure. A couple of points, and then, look, you know me from speaking to me before, you know we have a disagreement on this. So I'm going to just put two points to you, and then I'm going to shut the hell up and the floor is yours.
Sure.
Two things. The New York Times is pretty much anti-Trump, and we know Trump is very pro-Israel, pro-Netanyahu, and you have to wonder, why would he expose Jewish paedophiles who, many of these paedophiles, they do, you know, a lot of political work for Israel. So this is the problem I have with Trump. So the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Well, I, you know, I think Trump's exposing all the pedophiles. He doesn't care if, what religion they are. Like, you know, the deep state has infiltrated pedophiles into many religions, many groups, from Jewish groups, you know, the Catholic Church, as we well know, yeah. Scientology, sexual abuse and pedophilia, huge in Scientology, okay? You know, pedophilia is rampant in all of these circles. So it's like, I think he's going after all the pedophiles. If you're a pedophile, like, you're done. I don't think that he is just targeting, you know, certain groups of pedophiles, because, you know, the Illuminati, the deep state, they have infiltrated a ton of groups of pedophiles and intentionally. Okay. And so let me just explain this here. The deep state has infiltrated on purpose and different groups with pedophiles and sexual predators. They have literally lifted up and put people that they know are sexual predators and pedophiles in positions of power to keep these pedophile rings flourishing, to keep them running. Okay. So, for example, there are a lot of people who are police officers, politicians, judges,
yes.
District attorneys, and it's not just limited to law enforcement. We're seeing pedophiles in Hollywood, the banking system. We're seeing pedophiles, you know, in a lot of these religious organizations, all of them. I mean, there's very few religious organizations where pedophilia isn't rampant.
Absolutely.
Okay? And these people have been, and I learned this as a victim, by the way. Like, I unfortunately have gone through the system. I've been dealing with, you know, the person that sexually assaulted me. I've been dealing with going through the court system with a person that sexually assaulted me for 5 years now. And I firsthand experienced how I had a sex crime detective laugh in my face when I tried to report the sex crime committed against me, which almost killed me, by the way. And this is before I really was woke and understood what was going on. And now with everything I know and everything I've researched, I now know that pedophiles, they operate in rings. And the deep state has infiltrated so many different circles to protect
no the doubt. Child sexuality. Liz, can I make one final point on that? Let me just make one. Yeah. You're absolutely right. This is not a Jewish problem. But, I'm going to say but, the paedophile networks operating in Hollywood, it is a Jewish problem. And many, whether they like it or not, they can scream yeah. anti-Semitism all they want, as we've exposed on this programme. You know, and the New York Times did a piece on this, the Hollywood Reporter did a piece, the Times of Israel did a piece on this. Hollywood is owned by Jewish businessmen and Jewish women. They've mm-hmm. overseen the satanic paedophilia you talked about. Now, many of these Hollywood moguls are very, very useful to the state of Israel. And Trump uh-huh. is very pro-Israel. So why would he expose what are effectively Israeli Hollywood operatives? Why would he do that? He's biting the hand that feeds him. Now, I'm not saying he's not doing it, Liz. I'm just yeah. saying it's a hard sell, you know. Go ahead.
I just, like I said before, I believe that President Trump loves children. And I believe that he is dedicated to exposing all elite pedophiles, and he does not care, like, you know, where they're from and what their religion is and who their allegiance is to. He doesn't care. You know, and I, it's just, I don't know. I think he's going after all of them. I mean, I've tracked all the arrests that have been made on his watch, and there's been Republicans, there's been Democrats, there's been
Yeah, everybody. Liz, do you worry about him, Liz? I mean, I know you're a supporter, and listen, I admire that. Who the hell am I yeah. to be right? Listen, you and I are just exchanging opinions,
yeah.
and I'm delighted that you come on. I look forward to you coming back on again many times in the future. So, I've made me points. I'm not an idiot, so I'm going to shut up. And I totally respect your point of view.
Yeah.
You must be worried about his safety then, Liz.
I do, but you know, I believe God's protecting him, and I believe that these elite pedophiles and globalists, I mean, they've been completely exposed. They've lost their power. And I, you know, I do worry about him. Like they absolutely, I believe that if they can, they will try to kill him. But I truly believe that he's being protected by God. You know, I mean, he shouldn't have won the election. I mean, this man, he has defeated the odds at every step in turn. I mean, it's just like miracle after miracle, this man. I mean, the whole world was against him. He had, you know, the media against him. He had all of the elites against him. He had everyone in Hollywood against him. I mean, Hillary had all the power, all the money. I mean, she had so much money. He had everything against him. He should have won. And I do believe that God played a hand in this. I believe God's protecting him. And, you know, these evil people that have been running the world, raping children, these elite pedophiles, it's been going on for too long. And I believe that this is God's will for them to come down.
I hope you're, I still hope you're right, Liz. Liz Croken is on the line, folks. We've got about 7-8 minutes left on this. Thanks for doing it, Liz, and thanks for persevering with the technical problems. I want to go back. I want to go back to something we spoke about a bit earlier on. And this is where, this is terrific journalism. This is the essence of journalism, what you're doing, but it's dangerous. I've seen you today tweeting very, very senior politicians who had very close relationships with convicted paedophiles. Now, David Icke's been doing this for years. David's been asking questions of the friends of deceased paedophiles like Jimmy Savile and others, because this is where it leads. This is the network. You've been tweeting people, bravely, I think, and very ballsy, if I can use that term, asking them about, asking them very, very difficult questions about their relationship with one particular paedophile, the former congressman and football coach Dennis Hastert. Tell us more about that.
Right. So I'm from Illinois. He's from Illinois. Dennis Hastert is the former Speaker of the House. Now, Dennis Hastert was raping boys for decades.
Years.
He was a wrestling coach, okay, for years, and he raped several children, all right? And this goes back to how I was explaining that the deep state literally puts pedophiles in positions of power so they can continue, because if you're a pedophile, you're going to protect other pedophiles, obviously. I believe that he was hand-picked to run for office, and he was promoted to the position he was promoted in because he's a pedophile. You know, the pedophiles are great for the New World Order. They're great for the elites because they're easy to control. Because if you're raping kids and, so, you know, they have evidence of that, proof of that, that is a great way to control a politician. That's a great way to blackmail a politician. But, okay, so Dennis Hastert, raping kids forever, ended up going to jail. You know, there's a lot of rumors that Senator Ben Sasse, okay, who also hates Trump, and I always say, look at the people that are speaking loudest against Trump because there's a good chance they're tied to pedophilia. There's a lot of rumors he worked with Dennis Hastert back in the days, and people used to procure little boys, you know, for him.
And you want to know what this guy Ben Sasse, you want to know what did you know? What did you know?
I want to know if he was involved in that, and he, of course he hasn't responded to my tweet, and he won't. But there, you know, with this whole Weinstein thing coming out, there's so many people that are like, oh, why didn't anyone say anything? Everyone knew. Why didn't anyone say anything? Well, when the pedo-gate breaks wide open with Congress, D.C., John Podesta, okay, there's going to be people like Senator Ben Sasse that people are going to look at him and say, you worked for Dennis Hastert. This is a known pedophile. What did you know, and why didn't you say anything?
Well said, Liz. But this is the problem, you see. We've asked questions here about, you know, members of the royal family. Prince Andrew was a friend, a very close acquaintance of Jeffrey Epstein. We're not accusing Prince Andrew of anything. You haven't accused Ben Sasse of anything. You are just saying you knew this guy inside out. You must have known something. Is there anything you can do to help us with our further inquiries?
Exactly.
These are the questions you're asking. These are serious questions. And Sasse, and because I saw your tweet, and I took an intake of breath, and I thought, she's in dangerous territory here. And I looked at it and I went, right. But then I did a bit of research, and Ben Sasse isn't being accused by me or by Liz Croken of anything, but he was intimately acquainted with Dennis Hastert for years. And Liz believes, and I think Liz is onto something, that Hastert may have been procuring boys while he was working on the Hill. You think that, right?
Yeah. And here's another thing that I want to make clear to your audience. You know, the you know, we know for a fact that that pedophilia is rampant in DC circles. Okay, it is, but there are people that are involved that aren't actually pedophiles. You know, the whole point of Jeffrey Epstein's island was to get video footage of people allegedly like raping minors. Now, there's no question that there was people that went there that aren't pedophiles. And the people that went there that weren't pedophiles, they were drugged and then they were set up and then they were videotaped and or photographed to make it look like they were involved in pedophilia and they were involved in raping children.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's really unfortunate because that's one of the reasons why people, good people, stay silent because they've been framed, they've been blackmailed.
This is the Godfather 2 sting, isn't it? This is the sting in the Godfather 2 when Tom Hagen brings the senator who won't do what Michael Corleone wants him to do. He brings the senator to a brothel and makes the senator think that he murdered a girl, but he didn't really murder her. But then, of course, he belongs to the Godfather forever. This is the sting that you're talking about. We've talked about that going on here in the UK as well. Good people put into compromising situations, and
exactly.
Then they're owned forever then, Liz.
And that's how they're controlled. But, you know, I do want to get back to the whole situation with pedophilia within the Jewish community because, you know, now that you brought that up, it's kind of my head's spinning because I'm remembering a few things that I want to point out about that. It is interesting because from my research, pedophilia is rampant within the Jewish religion, from what I've researched. And I've also discovered that predators prey on children at Jewish camps, okay? Now, it is interesting how pedophilia has been completely exposed in the Catholic Church, but we haven't heard, there hasn't been a huge scandal about the pedophilia that goes on within the Jewish community, and we do know that, you know, the Jews control most of the mainstream media and Hollywood. So there is, you're probably onto something with that. But something else that I find that very interesting, and I need to do more research on this, okay? But there's something to this. I know this with all my heart. Seth Rich, he went to a Jewish camp, okay? And he's also from Omaha, Nebraska. And that's where the whole Franklin scandal went down. And that they were taking, you know, boys to be sex slaves for people in D.C. from Omaha. So furthermore, who is Seth Rich? Seth Rich is the person who leaked the emails to WikiLeaks. I firmly believe that there's a tie between Seth Rich and sex trafficking. And it could just be that he found out about the pedophilia because he read the emails, he read the Podesta emails, and he knew that the sex trafficking was going on. That's probably that's why he leaked the emails. But, you know, I wonder, why did he leak these emails? Was he a victim? You know, he comes from an area where pedophilia is rampant. I've talked to his family members, and they have ties to Jeffrey Epstein, okay? So there's a lot of, and he would go to these Jewish camps. Oh, and furthermore, I thought this was very strange. You know, the Democratic Party hasn't donated any money for the reward fund to find his killer. But you know what? They did donate money to the Jewish camp he went to in his name. And I don't know. I think there's something there.
I think, you know, quite extraordinary the journey you're on, it really is.
Yes.
Some of our listeners didn't realise that you're a victim. I should have made that clear in the intro. This is me assuming knowledge. When we spoke back in February, we talked about your own experiences, Liz. Do us a favour, because I did say this last time, but it didn't materialise. Do drop in and out fairly regularly, will you please? Open door.
Absolutely.
You have an open door into the programme. You know, I certainly don't know everything, Liz. I hope you're right about your president. But you're right about everything else, whether you're right about Trump or not. And, you know, you're doing great work there. And you're doing it for on behalf of other people. And I really admire that. You do need to be careful, though. Look after yourself. Do you know what I mean by that? You know, just be careful. I mean, you're asking questions of some very powerful people. And you've got a lot of clout. Go ahead.
But I do believe that, you know, the cat's kind of out of the bag, and these people that are involved with it, like I'm like the least they have to worry about. They have a lot of problems ahead of them. I really do believe all this is going to get exposed, and we're going to see like one third of our government go down because they were involved in child sex trafficking and pedophilia. Like I really believe that. Harvey Weinstein's just the start. Grab the popcorn. We're going to start seeing story after story coming out about people in Hollywood and DC that have been involved in this disgusting stain on humanity. And I just can't wait for them all to be exposed because it's gone on for too long.
Well, let's hope we're seeing, you know, an irreparable crack in the dam. Liz, I always mention you on Twitter, of course, and I put out your Twitter handle. Let me know. It's at Liz Crokin on Twitter, by the way. Couldn't be simpler. At Liz, C-R-O-K-I-N. Is there a website, Liz, you want me to promote?
Yeah, it's just my name, LizCrokin.com. So I listed iDestroyer earlier this week, where I listed about 25 elite pedophiles who have been arrested this year. And that story went viral, crashed my site a few times. My site was hacked, probably both. But and I just did a story with a rape victim who was raped by Mark Salling, who was a huge star on Glee. And he just got sentenced to a few years in jail for child pornography. So, you know, these kinds of stories, we're going to start hearing a lot of these stories because, you know, people like Mark Salling and Harvey Weinstein, just the tip of the iceberg, just the tip.
Liz, great work and continued success with it. And as I said, drop in and out regularly. Keep us on the old speed dial there.
Thank you so much for giving me a voice on your show, and you keep up the great work as well.
We're only a platform, Liz. Thanks very much. Love having you on. Okay. I'll speak again soon.
Take care. Bye, Richard.
Bye for now. That said, the lovely Liz Crokin live on the line. She's on the Pacific Coast today in California, and she is doing great work regardless of whether we're right or not. Who's right or who's wrong about Trump, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, if these people are being exposed. Great lady, it's exactly 6 minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. No false modesty here, by the way. The show, in terms of me, I don't do anything. I don't expose or uncover anything. But there are wonderful men and women out there, including the man who came up with the idea for this show, who've been exposing stuff and asking questions. And all people like that ultimately need is a platform. It's a tragedy. I say this all the time. You see, I'll finish up and I'll go on and I'll have a sneaky drink tonight. I'll have a sneaky drink. And all I'll be doing is regretting that the voices we heard on the programme tonight and this week are not being heard on BBC Radio 2, 4 or 5, or are not being heard on BBC News or Channel 4. That's the thing, you see. It's getting these voices to greater and greater audiences. She's a great lady, is Liz. And Maggie Oliver is an absolute star. What a courageous lady Maggie Oliver is. If you missed any of it, the podcast will be online very soon. In a few minutes' time, actually, if you missed it and you're only coming in on the end of it. Failing that, the YouTube interviews, the individual conversations with Liz and with Maggie will be on YouTube in the morning. And you can find them on davidicke.com. You know, you don't have to necessarily go looking for them on YouTube. They're always on davidicke.com, the brand new davidicke.com. The man who, to his eternal credit, has been asking questions of people and exposing elite paedophile rings for 2.5 to 3 decades now. And I'm glad that he gets a lot of heart in hearing people like Maggie Oliver and hearing people like Liz Crokin. I really am. That's it then. The next time you and I speak will be on Sunday morning. Sunday View will be live at 11 o'clock. That's when I just basically have a rant about the front pages of the newspapers. I don't mind doing that. You don't mind me doing that, hopefully. So we'll do that on Sunday between 11 and 12. Until then, to keep up to date with what's going on and the news that is being suppressed, go to davidicke.com. And for a bit of light entertainment, do listen to the programmes of the amazing FabRadioInternational.com here in Manchester. Thanks to Simon Stewart for all his help this week on the programme. Big shout out to Simon for uploading our videos to YouTube. I'm going to leave you and love you. Thanks, Maggie Oliver. Thanks, Liz Crokin. Thank you for listening. Until Sunday. Bye now. See you Sunday. Bye.